Well, whether it's by choice or by necessity, a lot of folks have to avoid a variety of different products, including dairy products, gluten in a lot of flours, or other items like casein. Erin McKenna is the author of Baby Cakes Covers the Classics, gluten-free vegan recipes from donuts to snickerdoodles. Erin is also the owner of Baby Cakes NYC, a gluten-free vegan bakery with outposts in New York City, Los Angeles, and Orlando. And she is joining us by phone from their Los Angeles store. Erin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's really exciting to have you. I think that you know, there are a lot of things, a lot of recipes that are vegan just because of the way they are and no one really thinks about it. There are a lot of ways to work around, you know, especially in main courses or vegetable dishes, you know, work around dairy, work around gluten-free. I think when you get to dessert or treats or just anything sweet, that's when most of us say, what? There's no way.
Exactly.
There might be a way to do it, but there's not a way to do it that you'd actually want to eat, I think,
right,
is often the conventional wisdom. But you are living proof, and all your customers are satisfied proof that it is, in fact, possible.
Yes, it is true that when it comes to baking, it is a lot more tricky than just cooking. But I think that when you just use really high-quality ingredients as your replacements, it really comes through in the baking, and things actually end up tasting even better, and it tastes like actual food on top of a dessert.
Well, and it seems like more and more people are finding that they need to avoid gluten in their diet, whether that's, you know, a function of it just being diagnosed more effectively or just greater awareness. What are some of, I know you're not a medical professional, but what are some of the more common reasons that you hear of from your clients that they need to avoid gluten?
Well, I mean, of course, there's the people who are tested and come up positive for celiac disease, but there's also a general feeling of just major bloat after eating, fatigue, nausea, headaches, skin rashes that kind of like have been persistent through life. I actually have a sister who had psoriasis her whole life, and just recently, as a last-ditch effort, became gluten-free, and it completely cleared up. Hmm. So I think that it's gluten can be attached to many different ailments that people just kind of shrug off as, you know, getting older or, oh, I just have a sensitive stomach. And there actually is a pretty easy solution to feeling better, and that's just avoiding gluten.
And gluten is only in certain kinds of grain, correct?
Correct. It's in wheat and barley and rye, but there are a lot of alternatives now on the market that that I've found a way to combine and give that same mouthfeel, the same, you know, has the same crumb and the same texture. So we're not in as bad of a state as we used to be.
And what role does gluten as a ingredient or as part of the content of a baking recipe, what role does that gluten generally play in baking?
Gluten is the thing that really binds the baked good together. It gives it a really nice texture and crumb. And it's just that chewiness that you have in bread.
Mm-hmm. Like the elasticity.
Yeah,
kind of,
the
right?
Elasticity.
Right. And your recipes and baked goods also cater to a wide variety of other dietary needs other than the gluten-free. Like what?
Oh, like we're also dairy-free, casein-free, we're soy-free, egg-free, we don't use refined sugar. So it really is across the board pretty much, you know, healthy for most people.
What is casein?
Casein is just a protein found in dairy. Sometimes people just avoid that protein part of dairy. Yeah.
So how did you personally come to want to tackle baking with those restrictions? Were you just up for a good challenge, or was it a personal thing?
Yeah, I'm always up for a good challenge, but I had to remove, I had myself become really sick, and my doctor suggested that I remove wheat, gluten, dairy, eggs and soy from my diet, which was really devastating because I was I just had a huge sweet tooth. I just ate sweets all day. And And I found that, you know, when I saw what was on the market, well, number one, I started to live a life without those ingredients, and I started to feel 100% better. So I became really interested in health and just how the body processes different things, and became really careful about what I was putting into my body because I just wanted to continue to stay feeling great. And when I went to the store to find any sweets that were, you know, would fit the bill for what I couldn't have, everything was just really dry and, you know, cakey and just not, just really not delicious. And it was really depressing for me, you know. So I just really just started to bake for myself because I wanted stuff that actually tasted good.
We're talking with Erin McKenna, the author of Baby Cakes Covers the Classics, gluten-free vegan recipes from donuts to snickerdoodles. If you have a question for Erin, you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can leave a comment or question or recipe on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Erin, I can tell you from prepping for this program that there are a lot of skeptics out there that either vegan or gluten-free baked goods can be delicious, let alone both together. I'm sure you hear that a lot. What's your general response to that?
Well, I mean, I think there is a good reason that people are afraid, because for so long there has been really bad products on the market, and there's still, and there continues to be. I mean, I continue to try things when I see them on the shelves that are vegan and gluten-free, just because I want to know, I just want to see, you know, where we're progressing, and it's still really pretty dismal. So I'm not ever shocked when they are concerned about trying it, that it's not going to taste good, but usually I just, you know, encourage them to get something, and once they have a bite, there it's, you know, it's like clockwork. They come back for like 10 more.
You've got them hooked.
Yeah. It's like it's funny. In the beginning, we used to have this whole thing. People would come in and be worried of like, oh, it's not going to taste good, and they'd buy a cookie and leave, and we would count down. We'd be like 10, 9, 8, 7, and then they'd be back in the door and buy a dozen. They're like, oh my gosh.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, and New York Times food writer Mark Bittman says, vegan or not, gluten-free or not, Erin McKenna's donuts are the best I've had in 20 years without exception.
Okay.
That's pretty high praise.
I know, especially coming from such a guy who's like, you know, lives in donut world.
Right, rock star foodie, yeah.
I know, yeah. So that, yeah, I was with him when he tried them, and he was just blown away, which, you know, really obviously was the biggest, that felt really good.
Yeah. And actually, one of the recipes that we put up on our Facebook page, that's The Larry Mueller Show, and Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Sometimes people aren't sure how to spell that. We do have your basic donut recipe with
that's
your
good.
Cinnamon sugar. And I have to say, I never really thought about there being like a donut pan or a donut mold. And so I'm going to have to track one of those down to be able to try the recipe. But it sounds great.
Oh, yeah, and it's so easy to make. It, you know, you look like you really did a lot of tricks, but it's really just like a basic batter that you bake into a mold, and it's really super easy to make. And you can get the molds on Amazon.
Oh, great.
It's pretty cheap.
That's good to know. And actually, I know in Madison, I'm sure in others, cities in Wisconsin, too, there are, you know, locally owned kitchen supply places, too.
Oh, yeah,
that,
I'm sure they'll have
it.
That.
Nancy in Hubertus has a question for you, Erin, so let's
sure.
go to the phone. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. I was at the store today, and I found some coconut flour as an alternative. I wonder if you've ever used that.
I do use it occasionally. I would use it in small amounts, and it's mainly just to add fiber, and I wouldn't use it cup for cup for a gluten-free flour. It's like, I don't think it really has carbohydrates in it, so it tends to be almost more starchy, and it's really healthy, and it has a lot of fiber, so definitely add a few tablespoons into your recipe if you're fooling around with something, but as for, you know, exchanging cup for cup, it's not that key.
Okay. Do you alter the oil then at all?
I don't put coconut flour a lot in my baked goods, so I don't really know the answer to that. I'd imagine because it kind of dries out the batter, you'd want a little more water, a little more oil.
Great.
That would be my first guess. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Nancy. We hope you try it and give us a report back on that. Actually, Erin, that brings up an interesting question. I think one of the mistakes people make when thinking about eliminating more common ingredients in a recipe is to make substitutions without knowing if the replacement really has the same qualities to it.
Yes.
And I think especially with baking, which is really more of a science, I think, than,
yes,
than cooking other things, that's really important because most scientific formulas are pretty precise for a reason. What are some of the ways that you avoid common ingredients that can't be in your recipes?
Well, I've kind of have it down to a science now. I find that the best alternative to, replacing gluten-free flours for wheat flour is a combination of garbanzo fava bean flour, rice flour, potato starch, and arrowroot. And in all my books, there's breakdowns of what that, ratio is. But all those combined really give like a nice rise to the baked goods.
And say those flours again a little more slowly. So,
sure.
Because some of them, I think, especially the garbanzo bean fava one,
yeah,
is not that familiar.
It's called garbanzo-fava bean flour. And it's just a mixture basically of garbanzo and fava beans. Arrowroot and potato starch are both starches that you need when you're taking away wheat. And then rice flour, I always add a little bit of that as well because the garbanzo fava bean flour tends to have a strong flavor, so the rice flour calms that down a little bit.
And brown rice flour has a really nice sweet flavor to it.
Oh,
too.
I love it, yeah. And then you just add a dash of xanthan gum, which is, it's natural. It comes from a plant, and it just adds that kind of viscosity and the chewiness that you lose when you take the gluten out.
And that's spelled xanthan as X-A-N-T-H-A-N gum. And I think you see that,
yeah,
often in, I'm thinking actually in ice creams, it's,
yeah,
often added.
Sometimes in ice cream, I even saw it in like Hostess cupcakes. I think they use it to, it adds moisture and chewiness,
mm-hmm,
and fudginess.
And you also call for something called vegan sugar in,
yeah,
a lot of the recipes. And my first thought was, I didn't know sugar couldn't be vegan.
I know. It's so crazy that white sugar on the many white sugars are processed with bone ash.
Okay.
So it's not vegan. But any, Florida Crystals makes a great vegan sugar.
Great. And actually, Erin, we have to take a quick break here, but we will be back after the news. Welcome back. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson talking with Erin McKenna, the author of Baby Cakes Covers the Classics, gluten-free vegan recipes from donuts to snickerdoodles. And Erin, we have some folks on the phone, but I also want to make sure we get to a few emails that came in earlier. Ellen emailed wondering if you've ever tried to make vegan cannoli, and if so, do you have any tips? And for those that might not be familiar, cannoli are a little very crispy pastry tunnel stuffed usually with a sweetened ricotta cheese mixture. So there are a lot of things to avoid in there for vegan.
I have tried to make cannolis in the past, but I haven't been successful. So I'm not really sure. I really don't have any tips on that. I wish I did.
Well, and actually one of the questions I had for you, Erin, is are there some baked goodies that really just don't work vegan and or gluten-free?
That's a good question. I really had a hard time coming up with a good pumpkin pie recipe for some reason that really isn't coming together.
Hmm.
I really think that bread is really hard. I've been trying to test that out myself, and for some reason I am continuing to work on it, but getting something that lasts longer than a day and stays fresh tasting and soft, that tends to be a really big challenge.
Mm. We also had an email from Nick who said, I would like to bring a vegan dessert for Thanksgiving, but due to a layoff, our budget is tight. Would you be willing to share a recipe or two for something really delicious that may be made with less expensive or at least fewer ingredients?
Well, I think that if you, all of my recipes are written specifically with the ingredients as written, but I think that if you are on a budget and you want to experiment with making the donuts that you put up on your webpage with wheat flour, you would just omit the flour, the potato and arrowroot. You'd omit the xanthan gum and just, you know, add up all those ingredients, see how many cups it makes, and use regular white flour. And then, you know, it might need a little more water or a little less. It's another shortcut. You can always find a less expensive vanilla on the market. I think that's about it.
Well, and I do think that sometimes, well, there are a few things. First, often when you make something from scratch, it's actually a lot less expensive than if you bought a mix that gets you halfway there or, you know, a finished product anyway. Also, I think one of the great things is more and more places you can buy things from a bulk section. So if you only need a quarter cup of an ingredient that you don't use that often, hopefully you can actually buy just a quarter cup instead of buying, you know, a 16-ounce package of something that you're probably, you know, 15 and three quarters ounces is going to still be sitting on your shelf.
Right. It is the stocking of the pantry is what is initially what you're going to spend money on. But the thing is the ingredients, you know, you have on hand for a long time and you can continue to make more and more recipes. So although it seems like you're spending X amount for one batch of something, you can make many batches.
Great. Also, Karen on Facebook had a question. What is the difference between potato starch and potato starch flour?
Potato flour is different. It's more of a flour. It's not a, it doesn't react the same way. I don't use potato flour in my baking, so I'm not really familiar with it. I know I did once accidentally use potato flour and potato flour instead of potato starch, and it was really much too dry.
Okay, great. And we do have some callers waiting to join the conversation, so let's go to Eve in Johnson Creek. Hi, Eve.
Hi. I was just wondering, I'm trying to be vegan and respectful, but I'm looking for something that might call for pumpkin seed oil. Any suggestions?
You're looking for a recipe that calls for pumpkin seed oil?
Yes.
I think that, I mean, I really, my thought is I've used a lot of different oils in my baking, and they all come out the same. So I would just substitute, you know, ounce per ounce pumpkin oil for the oil that calls in a recipe.
And does pumpkin seed oil have a particular flavor, Erin, that is different than?
I think it's a little more nutty flavor, but it's really healthy. So I definitely suggest. I'm not sure about the heating point on pumpkin seed oil. I know that some oils go rancid after they get too high of a temperature, so you'll want to check that out.
Yeah, that could ruin a good baked good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that call, Eve. And Heidi in Reedsburg is next. Hi, Heidi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
About brown rice syrup. I've never heard of it, and I found it in a store one day, and it's gluten-free. Contents are organic brown rice and pure filtered water.
Right.
Ever hear of it?
Brown rice flour is a really helpful sweetener. It's lower glycemic than sugar. It's in a liquid form, so you're not going to want to use it for cookies because it's liquid, it doesn't crystallize, which gives cookies that nice crunch. So for example, if you're looking at a recipe that calls for agave nectar, like many of mine do, you can try to substitute brown rice flour. I find that it's a little less fun to work with because it has a bit of a flavor to it, and it's a lot heavier. So if you have the choice to choose between agave nectar and brown rice flour, I would definitely go for the agave nectar because it's agave is very neutral in flavor and really light. But, definitely try if brown rice flour or brown rice syrup is something you want to test out, definitely feel free and just make sure you don't use it for things that require a nice crunch.
I wonder, especially when you look at old cookbooks, especially I'm thinking like, you know, church cookbooks and things like that, there's often corn syrup in a lot of those recipes. Would you be able, do you think you could substitute the brown rice syrup for that?
Yes, I think so.
Great.
I mean, I definitely know that there's going to be a little bit of a flavor, but definitely because it's a liquid sweetener, I would definitely substitute.
Great. And actually, Liz and Appleton had an email that follows right along on some of those same points. Liz says, we have been trying to follow a low glycemic lifestyle for almost a year. I find that agave syrup and coconut palm sugar, which produces less of an insulin spike in digestion, do not work quite the same as white or brown sugar. Has Erin worked with these and does she have any suggestions? And actually, Erin, if you could just say a little bit about what low glycemic foods are, because I think for some people that might be unfamiliar.
Like low glycemic foods are foods that have lower impact on your blood sugar, so it doesn't spike you up. The problem is that after eating sugar, you get hyped up, and then there's a really low drop, and it causes all different kinds of malaise.
And cravings for more sugar.
Yeah, and cravings for more sugar or more carbohydrates. And it's, you know, there's never a feeling of, feeling like full because you're constantly, like, wanting something. Most of my recipes use agave nectar, so, yes, I have tested that out. Coconut sugar I find to be, it's not as successful with cookies. It kind of gives, like, a earthy, I don't know, like a warm flavor. It's hard to describe. It's almost like eating a date. It also, even though it is granulated, and you would think that it would crystallize and make a cookie crunchy, it's still a little, the baked goods come out a little bit soft. But coconut sugar is a great alternative to sugar, you know, in most baked goods. I just, again, wouldn't use it for cookies.
Great. Thanks for explaining that. Mm-hmm. Carol says on Facebook, glad to get the donut recipes. This is what my husband, who has celiac disease, has missed the most. Just wondering if a quarter cup of vanilla is correct in the recipes.
It's correct.
Okay.
You know, and, as crazy as it sounds, if you want to get the right flavor, feel free to cut it in half to 2 tablespoons, but we love our vanilla.
Well, and as you pointed out, vanilla can actually be really high quality. Vanilla can be, it's worth the expense, but it can be an expensive part of it. And so what would you suggest, or are there some alternatives?
I mean, you can use half the amount of vanilla and just add, you know, if it calls for a quarter cup, put 2 tablespoons of vanilla, and then make up for that lost liquid with 2 tablespoons of water.
Mm-hmm.
I know that vanilla beans are really potent and less mm-hmm. expensive. Or there's always, you know, the cheaper vanillas on the market.
Right. Right. And you can make your own vanilla extract. I mean, you can just Google it. And as you said, you can actually get vanilla bean pods and scrape the inside and then add it to an equal amount of liquid and still get that really great, authentic vanilla flavor by doing that. Great. We had a question from Sahara on Facebook. She says, I have a friend who cannot eat any grain. I've made her crackers with chickpea flour, which is also garbanzo, and baked scones with almond flour. What else can I experiment with?
Well, those are the two great ones. There's the garbanzo fava bean flour. I'm not so familiar with the grain-free diet because I'm unclear on what a grain is officially defined as.
Mm-hmm.
My guess would be buckwheat that isn't cut with wheat flour.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that's a grain. I'm just not an expert on that.
I think buckwheat is actually...
It is a grain?
It's a grass, I think.
It's a grass, okay.
So, yeah, okay. But buckwheat has a great flavor to it, too.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we have Pat in Emory on the phone. Hi, Pat.
Hi there. I was just going to point out that coconut oil, I use that with everything that I use for baking. And it's a very good oil.
Mm-hmm.
I use it in my pastries.
Mm-hmm.
And also my coconut milk, I use that. And I use it natural. I don't use the sweeten or, you know, the vanilla or whatever. And I just wanted to bring that up to you.
Oh, yeah, I use coconut oil in all my baking as well. I think it's a really healthful sweetener. Really healthful fat. It's you know, stored in your body as energy and not fat. It's really high in lauric acid. It's just all around. If you're going to eat, you know, if you're going to do fat, coconut oil is like the top of my list. So that's great that you know about it. And it's also great for pies and things that need that flaky texture, because when it's cold, it solidifies. So it kind of is like shortening.
Mm-hmm.
And then it melts into the dough as it's put in the oven, and it creates those really nice flaky pockets.
Again, I think Crisco and lard are some of the things you find in those old cookbooks that
right.
It sounds like the coconut oil might be a solution for.
It's a perfect solution. Yeah, it's like, if you could have like a shiny example of what Crisco should be,
right?
You know, it's the best alternative for sure.
Well, and I think I'm really glad that Pat brought that up and that you've been mentioning it, because I think that there was a lot of bad PR about any kind of quote unquote tropical oils. And
right.
I think coconut was lumped in on that. But actually, as you said, it's very healthy.
Yeah, I think it was just not studied enough when there was like the big lynching on coconut oil, and people saw, you know, all saturated fats as bad, but it's actually really good for you. And I think I was watching Dr. Oz one day, and he was suggesting that people eat a spoonful of it in the morning, because it actually plumps up your wrinkles, because the fat will go like kind of just like, you know, fill in all those creases, so... Double duty.
Well, there you go. Or maybe they can just eat one of your delicious baked goods.
I know, exactly. That's what I say.
Well, we're talking with Erin McKenna. She's the author of Baby Cakes Covers the Classics, Gluten-Free Vegan Recipes from Donuts to Snickerdoodles. She's the owner of Baby Cakes NYC, a gluten-free vegan bakery with outposts in New York City, Los Angeles, and Orlando. And you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email talk@WPR.org or leave a comment or question or a recipe on our Facebook page, The Larry Miller Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Miller today. And Erin, what are some of your personal favorites? I mean, I'm guessing that there's nothing in the bakeries or in the cookbooks that you can't stand, because why would you have it there? But
right.
But what are some of your personal favorites?
My personal favorites would definitely, I mean, the donuts are right out there. That's my top favorite recipe I've ever made. The chocolate chip cookies are really insane. They're, you know, my nephew, who doesn't eat anything, he's really persnickety. It's the one cookie he'll eat.
Wow.
And he's not gluten intolerant or anything. So the chocolate chip cookies, the cupcakes are really delicious. They're really satisfying.
And actually, someone on Facebook was thanking you profusely for creating egg-free cupcakes, because that's something he's been waiting for. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. And it's a pretty easy recipe to do. So hopefully they'll have fun with that. I would say those are my top three of all time.
Well, and I have to point out that one of the recipes that you have and that we put up on the webs or on the Facebook page is for Thin Mints. And a lot of folks got Girl Scout cookie deliveries in the last week or so. And I'm guessing a huge proportion of those cookies that were bought were Thin Mints.
Yes.
So you actually have a vegan, gluten-free Thin Mint alternative.
They're so good. Yeah, we make them... whenever we have time in our New York shop, and we store them in the freezer, because when I was young, that's how we always ate them for some reason, and they just sell out. They're like a, you know, they're not on the menu, but they're like a cult hit. Everyone comes in, they're like, do you have the Thin Mints today?
Do people have the secret handshake to get the Thin Mints?
It won't be on the menu. They're like, can you check in the freezer? You know, and there'll be a stash. So those are so good. I love those.
Well, Rosemary in Barron is on the phone and would like to join in. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello.
Hi.
The reason I was calling is because in the Fox Valley, I don't know if it's Nina or Appleton, because I can't tell the difference to drive between one and the other since I live so far away from there. However, there's a wonderful little store called the Gluten Free Zone, and it carries gluten-free products and all kinds of baked goods and all kinds of pastas and everything else. And it's a wonderful little store that just opened within the last month.
And you said the Gluten Free Zone?
It's called a gluten-free zone.
Oh, a gluten-free zone. Great.
Oh, that sounds great.
Well, and I think that there are more. Thanks, Rosemary, for sharing that. I think there are more and more stores and restaurants even, you know, that are catering to those dietary needs and desires. Because, for instance, here in Madison, there's a restaurant that's all vegetarian, mostly vegan, sometimes gluten-free, called the Green Owl. And they are actually known for their baked goods. And,
oh, wow.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people are realizing, even if, like your persnickety nephew, even if you don't have to eat that way, that
yes.
You can actually enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, I really love that so many people are taking the chance to open places like that and doing a great job, because it really does make it more universal, and it makes, you know, for the people who do have food allergies and have to go to places like this, it makes it easier to bring people along, and it's less of a segregated experience.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's important, especially because people hopefully will be wanting to try recipes in your cookbooks. And this is actually your second cookbook, right?
Yes, it is.
Great. So some of the ingredients might not be familiar to people. And I hopefully we've done a good job of, you know, saying them slowly and explaining what they are. But even then, it can be a little intimidating trying to figure out where you can find those ingredients. In general, where are some good places to start, would you say?
Well, I mean, if there's a Whole Foods in your town, that's always great. Try to find the best health food store that seems to be the most popular, because they're going to be turning ingredients around quick enough.
Right.
They're not going to be sitting on the shelves. Another great alternative is Amazon. They actually have all the ingredients that I have in my book. And you can buy it, you know, they often have great discounts and free shipping. So I, you know, for the people who don't have that much energy to be running around to the stores, that's always a great alternative.
Or actually, a lot of our listeners live in smaller towns or rural areas, too. And so being able to get things online might be a really good option for them, too.
Yeah, you don't have to run around and, you know, one place has one thing, the other place has another thing, and it takes a lot of energy.
Right.
It can take a lot of energy.
Right. And you know, my experience is, too, that that stores are more and more aware of the issues that people have with different allergens or dietary restrictions, and they're more than happy to, you know, help. I know some co-ops and I think Whole Foods even give, like, gluten-free tours if someone wants to come in and kind of get guided to all the different products that are available.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because it is really confusing and intimidating when you walk in the door and it's like things like that caller was asking the difference between potato starch and potato flour. I didn't know that they were two different things.
Right.
The first time I went in. So.
Right. And I think especially if someone has just been diagnosed with something, it can be really intimidating.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to Kim in Lake Zurich, Illinois next. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm really glad this show is on, because what I'm looking for are three recipes, all gluten-free and one without nuts. And these would be Christmas cookies, because some of the Christmas cookies in the store that are gluten-free are okay, but I'm looking for some that are really yummy and something that kids will eat.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you could put them up on the Facebook site, but, you
well,
know.
The second cookbook has a great recipe for cutout cookies that are perfect for the holidays. You can sprinkle them or make them into shapes. It, you know, there's 10 cookie recipes in that book, and I know that the thing about Christmas is having just, you know, many, many different kinds of cookies and flavors, so there's, like, a wide variety. There's a great snickerdoodle, an excellent chocolate chip cookie.
Well, and don't forget the Thin Mints.
And the Thin Mints, of course.
That we talked about. Right. But we'll get the cutout cookies up there after the show. That's not one of the ones that's up there, but I'll get that up after the show, and we can share that. Kim was just talking about Christmas, but of course, Thanksgiving is next Thursday. Erin, is there a particular recipe out of the cookbook for someone to bring to a gathering? And as you said, you know, it's nice that everybody can enjoy it, but, you know, there's also winning over the people that might be skeptical about the vegan gluten-free baking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the first book, there's a cornbread that is really a showstopper. It's really delicious, and you can make it into stuffing as well. Just, you know, replace our cornbread with whatever cornbread your recipe calls for. Or the pumpkin muffins are really, really delicious. I'm actually eating right now this morning. They're really good, and nobody knows the difference.
Well, and what we have just about 30 seconds left. What are some of the things that you're still working on? You know, you said that there are some things that you've been trying to develop that just haven't quite made it there yet.
Well, what I'm working on right now is just a really nice sandwich bread. I have really high standards, so I've made some things that are pretty good, but they're not there yet. And also a croissant.
Ooh.
That's missing.
Wow, that's pretty.
That's the holy grail right there.
That really is, because it's not easy to make a great croissant when you have access to all ingredients.
I know. So it's a big challenge, but like I said, I love a challenge.
Well, Erin McKenna, thanks so much for joining us today. She's the author of Baby Cakes Covers the Classics. Stay tuned.